We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.
Hello and welcome to the Fatherly Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua David Stein. Today's episode focuses on mental health, which is a little bit outside of what we normally talk about on the Fatherly Podcast and honestly what we talk about on Fatherly. But 44 million Americans suffer mental health issues, and I'm one of them. And many of those people are parents, and I'm one of those too. Having a mental health issue, or struggling with mental health, or however you want to say it, really affects family life, it affects your kids, it affects your spouse. Not only is there a correlation between mental health issues and substance abuse and addiction, but also just behaviorally, day to day, how you are in front of your family, whether you suffer from mood swings or suicidal ideation or anger or sadness or depression, you know, kids are like sponges and they really pick that stuff up. I've struggled a lot to deal with my mental health issues and am dealing with them. And I wanted to bring in a woman named Valerie Poor, who is an expert in mental health, to have an honest and kind of difficult but I think important conversation about some of those challenges. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Fatherly Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show.
I'm your host, Joshua David Stein, joined by my ever loyal, ever wonderful co-host, Jason Gay. Hi, Jason.
Joshua, remain loyal.
Well, today's episode sounds like it's going to be laughing and happy, but it's really going to be dark and emotional. It's about mental health. It's about parenting with mental health. I don't think I've talked about it on Fatherly, but I have borderline personality disorder, which has been difficult for my family. And our guest is Valerie Poor, an MA, founder of Tara for BPD, which she founded in 1994. And author of Overcoming BPD, A Guide for Families. I think generally BPD, borderline personality disorder, and mental health in general is like a soup of acronyms. And what's BPD? What's DBT? What's any of this stuff? Valerie and Jason, I hope that we can come to a better understanding of those things, especially for our listeners. But also in like real world Terms, obviously it's tough to parent with mental health issues, but I haven't found that much literature or help on how to be a dad.
You're correct.
Yeah.
There's practically nothing out there. And what is out there is incredibly stigmatized.
Yeah.
So I think the first thing you have to figure out is what in hell is borderline personality disorder? What is it?
Yeah. Well, what the hell is borderline personality disorder?
That's my question.
Okay. So the answer is go to the science. So 25 years ago when I started this, they were lost in trying to figure out what it was all about. They didn't know if it was a form of schizophrenia. They didn't know, you know, if it was the walking well. And they began studying various obvious aspects of the disorder, which were many people who had the disorder were incredibly impulsive. After a period of time, they kind of figured out the whole impulsivity cycle, and they continued, I'm talking about neurobiologists, mm-hmm. continued to look at what this was all about. So in order to explain this, you have to understand that it was like a morass. Nobody really knew what it was. They just could describe behaviors. Marsha Linehan came up with a, quote, theory of what borderline was. And her theory, remember, a theory is not a fact. A theory is somebody's idea. Your right. theory, my theory, your theory, okay. But her theory was taken as if it was etched in stone. Mm-hmm. And she said that borderline was people who had lived in an invalidating environment. They weren't suited to their environment and was sort of a mismatch. And they were invalidated by their environment, and that caused this disorder. Hmm. Their emotions were not recognized in childhood, and therefore they developed these symptoms, so to speak.
Genetic?
No, she did not say genetic. That is the point. Okay, you're on it already. She did not say genetic. She did not say genetic at all. And it's 0.74% genetic from studies 20 years ago in, I don't know, Norway or Sweden. The man's name is Torgerson. And there have been other studies on the genetic loading of BPD. The first thing we do with our families is we make them fill out a family tree chart. And you could see that this one was alcoholic, and this one was depressed, and this one was sad, and this one was negative. And the person gets all of these traits all at once. It's sort of like a critical mass. But it is definitely inherited. Not only is it inherited, but we have a helpline. And Boris presented a, my intern Boris, who's sitting here.
Hey, Boris.
He presented a poster with me at the American College of Neuropsychopharmacology on a study we did on autism. We found that one out of four people with borderline have a relative with autism or Asperger's. It's absolutely something that has a heredity basis.
Well, so, I feel like as a dad, on one level, that's great because it's like, not my fault.
Right.
But as a dad, it's terrifying because...
Your children could have it.
Yeah.
Joshua, yes. In your instance, how did this start to manifest itself? And how, do you feel that you waited a very long time to look for a diagnosis?
You know, I think I'd been struggling for years with like mood swings mm-hmm. and aggression.
Sure.
Anger is like a big part of my issue. But having kids definitely made me see how my actions were affecting other people.
Having kids made you see that?
It was like, if I was just as a couple, when before we had kids, I think I was suffering from BPD.
Of course. You know?
But when you have, but you create patterns to deal with it, and they're not healthy patterns, but we had created patterns as a couple. I would get really angry, I would get really sad, and then we would work it out. But once you have kids, you kind of have to start dealing with your shit and seeing how it affects it.
Yeah. I relate to that myself. Sure. Absolutely.
That's a kind of incredible news for me. It gives you a way into treatment that I've never heard anybody really talk about.
How so?
Well, because one of the difficulties about borderline personality disorder, which if you give me a few minutes to explain the neurobiology, you would see what I'm talking about, is that they are basically miswired, and so they do not realize cause and effect. Mm. So they don't realize that when they go off and go into a rage or into a decline or not talking or whatever, avoiding whatever behavior they're doing on the turn of a dime, like very quickly, that the other person is affected. And so not realizing that person B's behavior changed because of what I did, it's very hard to get in there and do treatment when there isn't the connection in the brain that says, uh-oh, what did I do?
Yeah.
So part of the problem that we have with families is they see their loved one is suffering and they do not know how to get them into treatment. And if they get them into treatment with the way that DBT has changed, even though they're in treatment, they're not in treatment voluntarily. They don't know why they're in treatment. I think the best thing to do is to talk about what do we know today about borderline personality disorder. Not what you read on the internet. They're not manipulative. They're not angry. They're not trying to trip you up. They're not evil. They're not bad. What do we know? So what we know is we have to go back to Charles Darwin, evolution. We have to think about hunter-gatherers running around on the selva in the jungle. What kept the hunter-gatherer alive? Well, the more acutely aware you were of your surroundings so that you could detect danger, the more chance you had to survive. So BPD makes up 6%, 5.9% of the American population. I think that's like 18 million people. That's a lot of people with a disorder. Why do they have this inherited disorder? So what makes a good hunter-gatherer? Well, the first thing is in your brain, you receive stimuli from the outer world through a part of your brain that's called the amygdala. It's dead center in your brain, and a cow, a monkey, a lizard, a fish, a turtle, they all have this primary system in their brain. You would call it the fight or flight system. Mm-hmm. And this is the system that responds to danger. Well, just you're not scientists. What do you think? Are people with borderline more, less, or normally responsive to danger?
I would say I respond to everything like it's danger.
That's right. Because your brain is wired to be a hunter-gatherer. So when you
I am primitive man.
That's right. That's what you are. So when you go into school.
Womp womp.
And you're in school in the first grade and everybody's moving around and all the kids are doing and twitching and blah, blah, blah. You're getting all of this stuff in and you can't filter it out because your brain is wired to respond to danger in the moment. Now, that's all well and good if you could figure out what the danger is. But now there's a circuit in your brain. So the first thing is you have a thalamus that picks up the sensory impressions, goes into your amygdala, classifies it, and then it moves up to be figured out, what did I just experience? Well, with borderline, what we have clear-cut evidence is everything you see negatively.
Hmm. True.
So if I come in late, I came in late to screw you up. If I came in early, I came in early to screw you up. If I come in on time, you say, well, didn't you realize I need 5 minutes to set up? So it's a no-win. So you have a negative bias. Everything that's going on is going to have a negative outcome. It's all about you. She did it to me on purpose. He came late. They didn't find a chair. Why did she bring these people? So everything becomes a complicated thing of negative bias.
Why did you bring these people? I mean, I'm happy to see you.
To educate them.
She has bodyguards.
Oh, yeah.
Negative bias, self-referential behavior. Yeah. So if it's raining, it's not raining on New York. It's raining on you to spoil your podcast.
Colloquially, is this what we call like a, you know, persecution complex?
It looks like paranoia.
Yeah.
So it's negative bias.
Okay.
It's self-referential. Mm-hmm. And then when you walk in a room, you search the faces to see who's rejecting you.
Huh.
And you do this all automatically with no control in your body because this is like knee-jerk. It just happens.
So This is like the same experience I had. So, Jason, just to like fully answer your question, like a year and a half ago, I tried to commit suicide, and the way my wife stopped it. I'm sorry.
No, it's perfectly to be expected. Trauma.
The way she stopped it, she had Achilles, my son, talk me down.
What did he say to you?
He didn't know. I was in my bedroom. He just said he wanted to talk to me. He wanted to see me. And when you talk about, like, seeing how you affect other people, and that something has to change.
Can I ask you, what was the trigger that made you want to commit suicide? What had happened?
I was fighting with my wife. We'd been fighting for a long time. We had been together for about 9 years at the time, and had partially, because I had PPD, we had a really, really difficult relationship. Everything she said I took as a criticism.
Which is correct.
Yeah.
That's what I'm explaining.
So I only say that because it's hard to talk about, but I also think it's like important. That
absolutely.
This is what happened. Yeah.
I commend you for talking about this for sure.
Yeah. And I hope everybody that's sitting in this room realizes that his physical appearance, his body, everything changed when he started to talk about that. It was a complete shift in affect.
But I can shift back into regular affect now. So I think
that was very good.
A true pro.
But the point being, if I was your wife and I saw that happen to you, how would I respond?
Yeah.
Well, what I wanted to say is when you're talking about these three things that you just laid forth, so after that happened and I got a diagnosis from my therapist, I went and I read the description of BPD. And like what you're saying now, it was so eerie to read a list of characteristics that like described what I had been going through for years. You know, and it was like...
With no explanation.
Right.
No, and And I know it's not me. I'm not, this is what I struggle with now. Like, I'm not just BPD. I'm more than this disorder. And I bear responsibility for my actions that come from the disorder.
Right.
Like, it's still me. It's still my karma.
Right.
Still the consequence. And yet to see this, like, shadow self of, like, here are so many things you struggle with written down that someone else has seen as a pattern and, like, people like you, Valerie, study was so, it's like liberating in some way.
Yeah. It must have felt like some sort of epiphany or something that.
Did anyone explain the neurobiology to you?
No.
Okay. What is missing from the field is the fact that when you have these characteristics, which are not in your control, you must realize that they're not in your control. When you feel criticized, it doesn't matter whether you had the jury in and they say, well, was he criticized? Wasn't he? The point is, that's how you felt. And for you, that's what is a fact, what you felt at that moment. So at that moment, when you're feeling all of this, you have no way of knowing that there's an alternative viewpoint or that you could change those thoughts. The other person at the same time is side by side with you and has an experience. And they say, pass the butter, which is an example I use in my book. You're at the dinner table and you say, pass the butter. And the person is suddenly blown up and yelling and upset. And you don't know why, because they heard, you don't want me to eat. You think I'm too fat. You're taking the food away from me. I'm not the maid. Why didn't you ask him? And so on. So the communication between two people who are close to one another breaks down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you're here and they're there. I refer it as emotional colorblindness. So you're seeing red, they're seeing green, and they don't know you're colorblind, and you're arguing over what the color is, but nobody knows you're colorblind, and you don't know you're colorblind. So it's a no-win. What I discovered since 2013 from a group of borderlines, I run a group once a month, and what I discovered was that on top of this negative bias, self-referential, rejection seeking, is that all of this funnels down into a feeling of shame. I am a bad person. I did something wrong. I deserve this. I am bad and evil. And if you knew me, you would know how bad I am and you would want to know me. And that was when my whole concept of borderline changed, because I realized that they are walking around. It's not just the incident in the moment. It's this sack of pain that they carry around about every single thing in their life. So, for example, if you're sitting in the bed and you're feeling suicidal and your son comes in and he talks to you and you see what happened, now you have shame, like, oh, I said, my son, he's not going to want to be with me. It's like a rolling ball that keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's daily and it's there all the time. It's responsible for addiction. It's responsible for rages. And in studying shame, I sort of found an answer to all of this, which almost every behavior in borderline comes back to a sense of shame. I'm a bad person.
Okay, we're going to take a necessary break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back with Valerie Poore after that.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.
I feel like at this point, for a number of reasons, I mean, I do think thanks to DBT and thanks to my own, like, spiritual practice and just working on it, I'm in a good place with my kids.
Yeah.
My marriage is done, but there are other factors and we have a good relationship and, you know, but
you're how old?
37.
Yeah.
If anyone's looking on Tinder, or Bumble or Hinge or
the classifieds in the back of the newspaper.
Just kidding. But this will dog me, or this will be part of my parenting for the rest of my life, independent of the fact that my kids, because it is largely, you know, genetic in nature, they might as well suffer from BPD. But I also can't ask a 5 and 7 year old to understand that, like, hey, daddy is just really angry. So, you know, like, how do you talk to it?
And I don't want to, just to briefly just interject, you also use the acronym DBT,
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't believe we've clarified here because we've talked about BBT. BBD, rather.
Bell-Biv-DeVoe, PPD.
In the field, we talk about three-letter treatments.
Yes.
Which
okay.
Is also so, MBT.
So
and
as
blah,
the
blah,
layperson here, yeah. Could you clarify what...
DBT does.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Well, what DBT stands for...
Right. Dialectic Behavior Therapy.
Got it.
So, for example, in the moment, he walks in a room and somebody says, pass the butter. He's already up there, his sympathetic's going. We want to engage his parasympathetic, which would slow down his heartbeat and calm him down. We don't know how because we're just a wife or a mother or whatever or a friend.
Right. Or a kid.
Yeah, or a kid. And you see all this agitated behavior. And this behavior could last for 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's the other side of it. Because you could walk in and say, hi there, and all of a sudden he comes back into like the person you know. And you understand, and the other people say, where did that crazy person go who was just screaming at me?
Yeah.
Okay. So DBT is dialectic behavior therapy. And the magic word there is dialectic. Because when you have a thought, when you get these feelings and it turns into a thought and you feel I'm being rejected, they don't like me, whatever. At that moment, that feeling is experienced as a fact. You feel it as it's etched in stone and this is how I feel. I had an incredible experience the other day with a kid in my DBT group, the group of people with borderline. And his mother is in my class. So I knew the story from the mother. So the boy tells me this story of he's a young man who went to medical school, graduated from medical school, and was doing a residency. And for some reason got thrown out of the residency program. So now let's think in our mind, you went through 4 years of college, you went 4 years of medical school, you're now in residency, and now they threw you out? What in hell is going on?
Yeah.
So he's from a religious Jewish family, and he's home with his family. Mm. Now, in a religious Jewish family, the son becoming a doctor is he's now walking on water. He's attained the impossible.
Who else walks on water?
Okay. So he's walking on water, only he got fired, and yeah. He got fired from one place. Well, he could have had a lousy boss. It could have been something. You can apply to another place. But no, this kid is flattened. He'll never be a doctor. He's a complete loser. The shame has rolled over him like a tank. Okay. Well, now cut to the moment of where this interaction happens. He's with his mother. It's over the New Year's holiday. And the mother is sitting with him, filling out an application for some job.
Okay.
What kind of job it is, it's certainly not being a doctor. And the kid, so now you say, what emotions was he feeling when the doctor is filling out a job thing for, you know, a sweeper in a hospital or a taxi driver or, you know.
Shame.
Nothing but shame. Nothing but enormous shame. But the mother, who's not very cooperative in my class and hasn't bought in yet, oh, you have to fill it out. You need a job. You have to work. And so what emotion is now coming up? Like a volcano.
Anger.
No, not anger. The anger is secondary. Shame.
Oh, yes, right. Chain of emotions.
Yes. Shame is coming up. And he doesn't want to do it, and he can't do it, and he walks away. And the mother is saying, oh, but you have to do it. You have to do it. So he tells me this story, which I've already heard from the mother. So I say, you know, what were you feeling at this time? How did you deal with it? So going back to what is DBT, he recites every DBT skill that you're supposed to use to bring down your emotions, to figure out what your emotion is, your distress tolerance skills, your distress tolerance, your emotional regulation skills.
Interpersonal effectiveness.
He's got it all down and he's telling me everything he's doing.
Right.
But I'm looking at this kid and he hasn't got a clue about why this all happened. Hmm. That's the essence
well,
of
that's a, you have, that's like, a critique of DBT.
No, that's an observation.
An observation of DBT.
That's okay. An observation. Of course, I see what's happening. He realizes his emotions are up there.
Right.
He realizes they're out of sync.
Right.
And he just wants to bring them down.
Right.
But he has no clue to what started this cycle.
Yes. To answer your question, Jason, in some like very neutral way as well, like DBT, dialectic behavior therapy, is like a group of skills, like very just practical
strategies.
They're just that. They're like, there's a ton of acronyms. Some of them don't make that much sense, but it's like, Dear Man is
Dear
like,
Man is the best one. Yeah, go ahead.
What is Dear Man? Come on.
We'll get to that later. Right.
But what you're saying is the strategies without an understanding of the...
They work.
Right.
They work to bring it down in the moment.
But you still don't understand your core...
You don't understand what happened and why your emotions went like that.
And you feel that's a recipe for failure.
Yeah, because over time, how do you know how to prevent?
Sure.
You know, the idea is not just to when I'm up here shaking like a leaf, I should breathe or do something. The question is, why did I react like that? Because if all you're involved with is this, I got to keep me calm, I got to bring me down.
Right.
You are completely vulnerable to interactions with people because you don't know what happened.
Gotcha.
So he could have said to his mom, Mom, do you know when you talk to me about getting a job, it makes me feel like a complete failure. It makes me very uncomfortable. So I'm going to go take a walk and I'll talk to you later because this is making me feel very upset. That might have given him some power over himself.
Right.
Yeah. DBT is like extremely... I would say from like experiencing it and being in the class, like very external.
Yes.
Like, look, we're not going to be concerned with the root causes or any of that. It's like, here's how you talk to someone for a request when you want to say no to their request.
Right.
Okay. Now you're in a dysregulated state. Here is distress tolerance. So you avoid that state. And that's where the acronyms come in because supposedly, you're supposed to think of all these things when you're not dysregulated, practice them, and then use them when you do get dysregulated.
Can you tell me what Dear Man is now?
A Dear Man is a complicated one. It's describe, express, appear confident, reinforce.
Oh, it's an acronym?
Yes.
Oh,
it's
good
mindful,
grief.
Be mindful, assert, and negotiate.
Weren't kidding about the acronyms.
No, the acronyms are insane. And if I have to, like, level one major, like, criticism against DBT, it's like, first of all, the acronyms make no sense because half the time she uses, like, the letter, like, the third letter in. For the first thing in the acronym, it's like that is not like improve.
That's not how acronyms work.
One of them is improve the moment, and one of the eyes, I think it's improve. It's just like
no, that you're in give fast.
Oh yeah, give yeah, give fast.
Okay,
give fast. That whole phrase is an acronym.
Okay, so the bottom line is the skill is wonderful. Okay, I'm up there. I'm banging against the ceiling. How do I bring myself down? Okay. The bottom line is I have to live in the world. Yeah. My kid is going to come in and say, Daddy, take me to the baseball game. And I'm going to have to say no. The kid's face is going to fall and I'm going to feel I'm a failure as a father and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to go into the whole cycle and I'm not going to know why. So the point is that Dear Man, because I know Marcia so well and I know how she came about with this, if Marcia's treatment is based on Marcia's sense of having DBT and controlling herself in the moment, it's this. Mm-hmm. But he's over
Let
there.
The record show that she's hugging herself.
But it's completely within composing yourself.
Protective.
So I asked this young man, well, why were you doing this? And why were you doing this? And he had the correct answer for every single skill. But now in 6 months or a year, what is going to happen to those skills if he hasn't made the connection to what started this whole thing in the first place? Yeah. And that's what I teach. I want them to see that there are other people and that the other people had an effect on you and you couldn't cope with it. So you went into all your Dear Man, all your DBT skills.
Right.
But you didn't connect to what was the trigger.
I like a good metaphor. And what you're describing to me sounds like DBT is kind of like a strategy to stabilize the house, but you're talking about getting down into the foundation, to the core of
yes,
what
Yes, I'm
action,
talking about
structure.
Why did the fire start?
Yeah.
So it's DBT is like after the fact.
Gotcha.
I'm interested in when they're sitting at the dinner table. That's why I said, have your wife call me. We do run a class that can improve your relationship, even if you're divorced, because it teaches her to understand that you don't cause this behavior, that it's an automatic thing, and that she can bring it down in 2 minutes if she knows what to say when she understands what's happening.
Yeah.
What's happening is you are in the bloody jungle. You just heard this huge sound. You think that there's a big boar coming at you, and you don't have your other people around you to slay the boar. And you're sitting there, and you're going to be eaten up and killed. And what are you going to do? And you're feeling powerless, and you're feeling like, why did I come out by myself? And all of this is happening, and it's automatic, and you have no control over it.
How would you describe borderline personality disorder, like, to my kids who have seen me in dysregulated states?
Oh, what a wonderful question. I think that you have to explain a little bit about how brains work, and that daddy gets angry very quickly sometimes, and he misunderstands what's going on. And sometimes you could help me by saying that there's a magic word that comes from mentalization-based treatment. When the person is going up, it's because they feel threatened. It starts out with the amygdala and a sense of threat. When they feel this high sense of threat, how do you bring down the threat? Well, if you walk in a room and you think, I'm here and I'm angry with you and I'm going to do something bad to you, you're immediately going to go like this. You're up, ready for fight or flight. And I say, wow, looks like you think I'm upset with you, but at the same time, I have a pain in my stomach and I'm making a face because my stomach hurts and it has nothing to do with you. It's not my intention to upset you. When you say it's not my intention, it's like you put a pin in the balloon and the person comes down. It's as easy as that.
Yeah.
Just the understanding of what is going on and what language would bring it down actually works.
Yeah.
However, the problem is that DBT is taught as if it's global and your knowing it will alleviate these problems. But my feeling is that your problems are interpersonal. That means two people. And so the other person should know something about what you're experiencing, so that they don't get, oh my God, there he goes again. He's going to yell at me and we're going to have a fight.
Well, especially with kids, I feel, because like they don't know, they internalize all these warped lessons based on my dysregulated behavior.
Your behavior is not dysregulated.
Okay.
Dysregulated is a judgment. Your behavior is intense. Your behavior is extreme. But dysregulated means there's some level where it's perfect. Mm.
Okay.
So that's very important, because Linehan said that it's emotional dysregulation. It's not emotional. It's emotion regulation disorder. They can't regulate.
Okay.
With BBT, sorry.
BPD.
I am going to botch this continuously, so that's apologies in advance.
NBD.
Are the reactions, do they change sort of, or do they get more acute depending on the relationship? For example, like, you know, in a spousal relationship, or, you know, a boss relationship, or somebody you're seeing more regularly versus, you know, I think of a person at the airport.
Driver.
Yeah, you know, having road rage or airport rage, that kind of thing.
I just say one thing about that? Because from my experience, my BPD symptoms were like primarily just with my wife.
Gotcha.
Like in this room, I'm like with Andrew, my boss, with everyone, I'm cool. My friendships have always been a little volatile, but really where it got so intense.
Was it a relationship?
Was with my wife. And not even that much with my kids. I mean, my kids see it as a outgrowth sort of being in a bad way with my wife.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was that specific relationship, which was the most intense.
The answer to that is, firstly, BPD shows up the most with the people you're the closest to.
Gotcha.
So I call it the waiter syndrome. You walk down the street with your loved one. You son of a bitch, you're the worst husband in the whole planet Earth. No one is as horrible as you are. You're just disgusting. You're horrible, blah, blah, blah. We get to the restaurant. Oh, waiter, we'd like to sit at the table near the window. I call it the waiter syndrome.
That's what it's like.
Yeah.
And you say, wait a minute, what just happened? Where did that person go? Because you were just up there and, hi, I'd like to... I've lived with this. I've seen this. It's just, it's maddening. It's completely maddening. Yeah. Okay. So that's one aspect of it. I think that what you're getting at with your children is that you need to find a way to explain to your children that you misinterpret things and that you don't do it on purpose and it's not their fault. The most important thing with children is that they not inculcate the idea that they created the behavior. But what I have heard from people who have a parent with borderline is they grow up with a sense of insecurity of like any minute, the stability of the moment will go.
Like eggshells.
Yes. That's a horrible book with a wonderful title.
I don't know the book. I'm sorry. I just said eggshells. No.
What book?
I'm walking on eggshells. It's a book with no science and it demonizes borderline.
Wasn't making
Jesus,
a reference.
How dare you?
Was not making a reference, to be clear.
No.
Just using the standard metaphor.
I envy that title. It's the best title because you are walking on eggshells. Yeah. Because at any moment, you could say anything.
We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique two-in-one product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just two capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.
I had never thought about shame in my adult life. I mean, I'm a screwed up person. I've made a lot of mistakes. I do nutty things. But shame is not something I walk around with in my daily life.
Gotcha.
So I had a class with a all things, 21 borderlines showed up that night. Never had that many again. And I showed the neurobiology slides. And there was one slide where they could see, they call it ecological momentary assessment. So they take a person with borderline and or a normal person, follow them around all day. What did you feel? How many times did you feel happy, sad? And they had this chart and blah, blah, blah. And there was shame and disgust. And so the
routinely through the course of the day.
Yes. So borderlines had the numbers were high and the normal people, the numbers were lower and the normal people did not have shame and disgust.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this. I've shown it a zillion times to families and the whole class stopped me and they said that slide is wrong. I'll never forget it. What do you mean that slide is wrong? Shame should be the highest one. I said, what do you mean? I was like a dope. Like, what do you mean shame should be the highest one? And they started to describe the feeling of shame.
Yeah.
And I sat there like the village idiot. I didn't know truly what they were talking about. And Boris has been with me a year. We have articles all over the office. We're studying everything. We had not looked up shame. Mm-hmm. I'd never heard people discussing at a conference. It was like So we started researching shame. We put a survey up on the internet. Can you describe your shame feelings? So we have about 750, 800, somewhere around there, different responses from people with borderline describing how they feel when they feel shame. And I'm stuck with this because I've sent it out to this man, Pennybacker, and he studies language and he's analyzed language. And we don't know what to do with the terms. We wanted to get it out there so that your wife would recognize when you're feeling shame, when you say buzzwords, A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. But it was so profound. I still don't know quite how to present it, to publish it, because I had no idea that people with borderline lived in so much shame.
Yeah. What shame is internal, guilt is external?
Shame is I am bad.
Right.
Right.
Guilt is I did something bad.
Right.
Guilt is pro-social. I can apologize. I can send you flowers.
Right.
I can send you tickets to Hamilton. I can take you out to dinner.
Right.
But shame is I am bad and you are going to reject me because why would you want to be with someone so bad?
Okay, cuts to the soul.
So two things. And
does this resonate with you?
Yeah, but I think the way that it resonates with me and something that was like very, when I found out that it was a term, changed my life, is the idea of splitting. You know, splitting is when it's like, when things are bad, they'll always be bad. When things are good, they'll always be good. There's no middle ground or black and white thinking, which I think affects a fair number of folks with borderline.
Well, they describe it as a symptom. I have questions as to how it's interpreted, but go ahead.
But for me, the distillation of things into a solid state meant that every time I got into an argument with my wife, everything was going to be terrible forever.
Right.
Total despair.
Right.
Anytime that things were going well, I totally shut off anything that was negative. Right. And the way that it relates to shame is that if I felt bad about myself, there was no understanding of the impermanence of that mood or that this is something that's happening now, but maybe later I won't feel bad about myself. It's just like, I am bad. You know, there was no subtlety.
It's a very profound topic because the research that's been done on it is sparse in different places. It's not a unified thing. I was just at a 3-day conference in Boston on a new treatment for PTSD that dealt a lot with shame. Guilt is pro-social. You can get past guilt. Everybody feels guilt. You make amends. But shame is within the person, and it is... it's why people get PTSD. They have tremendous shame about something that happened to them. But borderlines are in a perpetual state of shame.
Yeah.
And most of the time when you ask, how does borderline manifest itself? There's two points that come up to that. One is borderline manifests itself by the person can act as if he's okay when the stress level's not too high.
Yeah.
So if we're not stressing you, you're the greatest guy. It was a pleasure to meet you. We had a lovely chat, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
If I'm talking to him about his marriage, his performance in bed, how we're going to raise the kids, are we going to buy a house or not? And these things are stressful. Everything's going to come out, and he can't hold it back in.
Can it even be the littlest things? Like, we're going to be late to the airport. We're going to
be because I just... yeah, I don't hear we're going to be late to the airport as a statement of fact. I hear it.
It's your fault.
As like, you are always someone who's like late to the airport. Why can't you be on time?
You spoil every event. Yes. Everything gets screwed up because of you.
And in your circumstance, do you feel that it was sort of like briefly episodic? Like it was, you know, here in a minute and gone in a minute? Or could it last for longer periods?
My way of interpreting the world was kind of... fucked up.
Yeah.
But,
can we quote you?
So that was like a constant thing. Mm-hmm. But when it flared up, but it flared, like, and I know you don't like saying dysregulation, but when I would go into these rages and start repeating myself and have like tics and like, you know, like that was episodic. But obviously that was so hard on the relationship that the relationship got worse and worse and worse. And I spiraled and spiraled and spiraled, you know, like it ramped up in how often I was getting in those states. Right. And then as my partner reacted to something that was clearly so difficult, because I had no idea what was going on, then I would get even more worked up. So it's like a pretty I think the term is vicious cycle. I think the cliche to use here is vicious cycle.
I want to bring us back to a little bit of the parenting since we're fatherlying here. And I still, like, I feel we got some great advice about talking to your kids. And first of all, Joshua, I don't mean to suck up to you all the time, but this is exceptionally brave of you to talk about this in this kind of forum. And I am sure this is the kind of thing that not just the people who regularly listen to this, but are going to share this among people and people will talk about this. But let's get some idea about talking to children about this, because I think that is probably one of the most consequential things you can do.
The point is that if you are 4 or 3 or 7 or 9 or 12 and you're living in a state of this stability, and then there's rage, then there's despair, It's not bipolar in any way. It's just these shifts in mood. And so you develop inside you this state of walking on eggshells of what am I going to say or do that's going to set it off. You have no idea that there's an internal mechanism that's going on. It could be the noise of a truck.
Yeah.
It could be the fact that you wanted, you know, steak for dinner and you got chicken. It could be that your wife is late and you're sure she's having an affair. I mean, it could be any one of a billion things that have no real importance. The question is, it's a perceptual disorder and a language disorder. And the closer you are to the person, the more this is going to set you off. Mm. So you go and you're there, you're triggered, and you're up there. Well, you've now upset the apple cart and the whole dinner table is like stressed out. How do you realize that I've just done it again? How do I bring it down? Well, firstly, at some point or other, depending on the age of the children, maybe we have to figure out some way to do a little booklet for you that explains this. Daddy has changes in mood, and it's not about you. You didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't your fault. It's my problem, and you have to just do this a zillion times. You have to do it every time it happens with the statement, it's not your fault. You didn't cause this. This is me. And I'm really sorry I spoiled dinner. So this has to be with an acknowledgement from both sides of the relationship that you're going to do this. And both of you are going to reinforce this with the children.
Because you,
you and
mom,
your wife to say that Daddy is not doing this against you because of you, that this is not your problem. You didn't cause this. When we had this girl give a talk at Tara, and she talked about her mother having BPD and her mother getting into these insane, crazy situations, she thought they were all her fault. And then the other side of it is she felt her job was to keep her mother calm. She took on the responsibility of I have to keep my mother calm at 5, at 6, at 7, at 8, because she knew if the mother went off, everything went off.
Yeah.
Sometimes there wasn't a different adult there to calm it down. So firstly, I think you have to talk about, you know, people's brains. This is how you react to things. And when things happen to daddy, I go up higher than other people. You're not dysregulated. Don't use that word, because it's judging yourself. It's extreme and it's scary. If you're sitting there and all of a sudden somebody says something and you're up here, it's terrifying. You've lost control of your inner self. It's scary. How do you bring it back down? And at the point when you lose control, so you have the amygdala, it goes to the cingulate, and then that cycle, that circuit turns off the thinking part of your brain where decision-making goes. So within that 2 seconds of response, your ability to think has left you. And until you bring it down, it won't come back. Well, how do you bring it down? Well, there's a book you might want to read called Compassion Focused Therapy. All you have to do is breathe in within 1 minute, 7 to 9 intake breaths with counting 7 to 9 regulates your heartbeat.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's like, I get in those extreme states and then my kids see it. And then how do I explain it or what do I say? And it is really helpful. It's rare that they do something that sets me off. And in fact, that's why now that I'm separated, it's like we don't have these instances very much, but it's like,
wait till they get older.
Okay.
We're going to have you back.
Yeah. but the idea that they see that extreme state, and I do, and I have been trying to talk to them about it. I don't say that I have borderline, I don't think they're old enough to really understand that.
Yeah.
But I do see a time when they're going to, if they do find out about it and they're like, oh, it's genetic, I'll be very, I'm nervous to explain to them.
Go back three spaces. Okay, so you're separated from your wife and you're not having these big issues with your children because your children aren't triggering you the way your wife did.
Yes.
How do your children interpret that?
Well, that's about it for the Fatherly Podcast.
No, but I know what you're getting at.
What am I getting at?
Yeah.
You're driving at the idea that the children and the wife would become resentful because she would think the children would internalize that she's the one making daddy mad.
What?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I, you know, candidly.
He sees it, yeah. In other words, when the wife is not there to trigger you, you can stay calm.
Oh, but okay, I just want to be clear about this, that we have a very good relationship. Like, we spend a lot of time together. It's not like every time we have a very, I don't know.
You still love her?
Yes.
Okay, don't be ashamed. That's okay.
I'm not, we're like a house with two families is what I call it. That's what we are.
You're like a family with two houses.
We're like an empty house with a broken hearth. No, we're a family with two houses.
This is very, very, for me, I work with couples.
Yeah.
And I have couples in my class. And when you have your DBT program, you have a section called Radical Acceptance.
That's the section I'm on now.
Okay. Well, Radical
Acceptance. Half smile, willing hands.
Yeah. Half smile, willing hands is action. Yeah. That's end result. What is it that you're radically accepting? Radical acceptance is I'm in a marriage where I love my husband very much and he loves me and he loves his children, but he gets triggered by things. And when he's triggered, he's incapable of being a reciprocal partner to me. Can I live with that?
Hmm.
I'm speaking from your wife's point of view.
Yeah, I can't answer that question.
That's the question. So we work with families, with partners, to talk about what that sense of reciprocity means, and can you get it sometimes and not all the time, and can you live with it?
Sure. Because that's a hard ask. And I have to be candid. I recognize elements of myself and my relationship with my wife and my family, you know, and getting agitated and triggered by, you know, very benign things. And it is a hard ask to ask of loved ones to not just, you know, recognize your triggers, but to modify their behavior because they know of triggers.
Yes. I mean,
it's like asking someone to never go above the speed limit. It's just, it's hard. It's hard. You can't get 100% success rate.
It's not even about that speed limit. It's like, hey, don't try to go the speed limit because your car is fucked up. So don't even try, right? Because it's not like, this is my experience. It's like, I'm asking you to, I don't want to say walk on eggshells, but I'm asking you to do these actions around me with understanding that any reasonable person would be able to deal with these things.
Yeah.
But I do another thing, which is I'm kind of a maverick in this field because I'm asking the families to learn what it is that sets you off and to understand that when you said, I'd like to have roast beef for dinner, and you come home and there's chicken, that if the wife doesn't say the reason there's chicken is because blah, 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 and I didn't forget that you asked about roast beef, at the same time I'm going to have roast beef tomorrow night, so can you put up with the chicken for tonight? Now, people do not go through all of that right in daily life.
Yeah.
This level of explanation.
They say, don't be such an asshole.
But this level of explanation in daily life would take away the sense of intention of she's out to harm me.
Yeah.
And therefore, you might start to go up because you would feel like I wasn't heard. And then when the explanation comes, you can bring it down. It's called noticing what triggers will come and dealing with them in the moment as they show up with an armamentarium of tools that can bring down the triggers. But the point is, you can't expect a borderline to deal with borderline feelings and emotions in an atmosphere where there's no adjustment from the world around you. Mm. You need some help. You can't do this all by yourself.
It's also hard to ask somebody in a...
You just had a big reaction
to
that.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
I was going to say you can deal with it when you're alone.
Yeah, but who wants to just be alone? You need a little dopamine from other people.
That's what YouTube videos are for.
But why is it difficult, and this applies to parenting too, like, why is it hard to modify behavior with the people that we're closest to? I think of, like, okay, you have professional relationships, you have bosses, you have colleagues, and you're like, oh, this guy's not very funny, so I'm not going to joke around with this person, or I know there's a third rail topic with the boss that I'm never going to bring up, and I can modify my behavior that way. You can do that kind of sleepwalking around, but why is it so hard with the people you're closest to and,
well,
at least in theory, care the most about?
You say it's hard with the people you're closest to because their opinion of you and their judgment of you is very important.
Of course.
At the same time, a person with borderline, if the boss doesn't say hello to them,
yeah,
they feel they're going to be fired. So
is
then
that
they
true?
Go and quit.
You feel that sometimes?
Yes.
Okay.
They go in and quit because the boss didn't say hello. The idea that the boss didn't say hello because his car broke down, the boss didn't say hello because his wife served him with divorce papers, because he just opened an envelope and he's fired. He's transferred to another office. He has to let go of 8 people. The company is in the red. The company is not doing what it's supposed to do. 50 different things could have happened. But when the borderline sees the boss not saying hello, it means the boss doesn't like me. He hates me. He's going to fire me. I might as well quit before he does it.
Got it.
You know, I use these funny examples, but they're absolutely serious examples.
No.
The thing is that a dialectic, let's go back to the term DBT, dialectic behavior therapy. A dialectic is the ability to keep two thoughts, two contradictory thoughts in your mind at the same time.
Yeah.
And the definition of borderline is an inability to do that. So it's as if when your mind goes into black, it's black. When your mind goes into white, it's white. You know, okay, I stood her up. I didn't show up to the movies on time. I was late and we missed the movie. At the same time, whenever she's sick, I'm there with flowers and candy. And when I take care of the kids and I do whatever happens. And that's where shame comes in. So part of what we're doing in the office, which is driving me crazy, is trying to figure out when does shame come? Because shame is a totally negative emotion.
Yeah.
It's an aversive emotion with no hope of positive coming in. And part of dealing with borderline is how do you change shame to either guilt, which is tolerable, or bringing it down. We don't know yet how to do that. And from my point of view, being older and being at this a long while, I know really the very cutting edge of the neurobiology of this disorder. And the family members who come to my class and the people with BPD learn this because I feel you need to know this about yourself. The thing I want to know is, where does shame come from? Where is it happening in the brain? What part does it play? At what age does it come in? And why doesn't it develop into guilt where you can cope with it? Because nobody is all bad. The other side I do want to say is you're very charming.
To you.
You're very, well, but just wait. You're very charming. Yeah. I'm just looking at you. We just all met you.
Yeah.
You have a lovely smile. You're very charming.
He's
I can
Boris.
See you have good intentions.
Yeah.
And you're not a monster. So when you're with your wife, there's 25 wonderful things about you. And she finds positive things. The same with your children. What you don't want to have is an atmosphere of total tension where everybody is waiting for when is daddy going to go off and what are we going to do when it happens?
Yeah.
And that's the problem, I think, of why you have me here, is how do you cope with that? So I think that somehow or other, you have to really say, daddy's having one of his emotions, so I'm going to go in the bedroom till I calm down so it's not your fault. And you guys, you know, play with your game, I'll be back. That would be one way to do it. But that you have to get it out in the open and talk about it, because basically it's not your fault. And if you think it's your fault and you approach your children that way, it sets up what you want to do is, I think, based on hearing people who've had borderline parents, is this terrible fear that whatever I do is going to create this mood swing, and daddy's going to be mad at me, or he's going to yell, or he's going to be mad at mommy, and it'll be all my fault. Because children can't figure out what's their fault. But then you're looking at very young children. That's why I asked how old your children were. As you get older, it gets more complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I can never do enough. They're always mad at me, blah, blah, blah. So it's the area in the field that is the least researched.
Well, I have to say it's a shame now, but as my therapist likes to say, our time is up.
I hope you've learned something from all of this.
Let's just take a pause here, though, and just sort of, you know, recognize what we've talked about here. And I, again, I said it before, but I commend you, Joshua, for talking about this and being candid with your, you know, personal, you know, pain and what really sounds like
vulnerability.
You know, it's an aspect of all of us that we seldom share in public, and I think it's incredibly therapeutic to hear your opinion and your expert opinion about all these things. So
I hope it helps.
This episode was produced by Anthony Roman and me, Joshua David Stein, engineered by Jesse Schultz at iHeart. Thank you to Andrew Berman, our executive producer, and Jason Gay, my co-host, Valerie Poor, my guest. Make sure you subscribe to the Fatherly Podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you listen to podcasts, and talk to you next week.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.